Hello, everyone. Welcome to Supernatural Junkies. I'm Super Alex.
I'm Dr. Kevin, and I am natural today.
I guess that means that I will be the junkie.
He is definitely got a lot of junk.
Wait a minute. I think there might be somebody else here.
Yeah, don't leave me off.
Who's that?
Who's that?
Who is that?
This is Dr. Dozier, and I'm lifting it up spiritually.
That's right.
He's pumping you up spiritually.
Yeah, pump you up.
We are here.
And we are
the Supernatural Junkies.
Have you ever wondered how you could get your hands on some awesome Supernatural Junkies gear? Well, the answer to that is it's now available on redbubble.com. We have a shop on there for Supernatural Junkies, and there's t-shirts, leggings, sweatshirts, hoodies, even a shower curtain. So if you've always wanted to have a shower, I'm Alex and I'm super.
I'm Dr. Thomas Dozier and I am also super.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dennis, and I am the natural.
Hey, I'm Dr. Kevin. That makes me the junkie.
Oh, yeah.
And we are
the Supernatural Junkies.
And we talk about all the things that you can't talk about in the church today.
And I like to talk about strengthening your faith, conspiracies, and how everything on TV is programming you.
I like to talk about how our Bible is relevant, whether you're talking about artificial intelligence, so-called aliens, or secret societies. By the way, I know what Dr. Cruz likes to talk about as well.
Spoiler alert, I like to talk about how current events are prophetic and exactly what our Bibles warned us would happen. Alex, what's your jam?
I like to talk about ghosts, aliens, demon babies, supernatural healing, you name it. Be sure to check out our 100-plus episodes on places like Audible, iPodcast, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Just search for the Supernatural Junkies wherever you podcast. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Supernatural Junkies. This is Super Alex. We are here with a very special... Why are you looking at me like that? He's looking at me like I'm doing something weird.
I get to be close to her today. Usually, we have to be at the other end of the table.
They separate us.
I don't know if you have that. So we have Kevin Sorbo here today.
Hey, we have Hercules here with us today.
That's right. And
we have the doctors as well.
Dr. Dennis, Dr. Dozier.
Dr. Kevin.
Yep. And myself.
And well, I played a doctor in movies before, but I'm not one in real life.
Well, and we know you do stuff with your wife all the time. And I've seen you guys do ministry stuff together. And sure. So you understand what it's like to work with your wife. It's awesome. And then trying at the times.
Depends on the day.
And I wasn't running. This is my normal interview gear. I reminded
you. Oh, my goodness.
I'm a patriot. So there. I got a very funny story in this. I've got a sweat. This company's going to be at my convention. I'd like to talk about the Rise Up Con later. But I'm walking through the airport in Dallas, and this stewardess, flight attendant's walking at me. She sees Patriots. Oh, you're a Patriot fan. I said, you better believe I'm period. Go America. And she frowned. She goes, oh, I thought you're a New England Patriot fan. I said, sweetheart, where do you think they got the name from?
Oh, my goodness. That's funny.
Patriot means not a patriot for the New England Patriots. I mean, it's just, you know, this is the wacky world we're living in. And she frowned at me. And I said, maybe you should go to live in North Korea. I think maybe that's your perfect utopia.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sure, you know, when you're traveling all around, do you see a lot of differences when you go to different areas of the country?
Oh, yeah. No question. Going to L.A. and 20% of the people still wear masks. Then you go to other places, and maybe one out of every 200, you know. So it is kind of interesting to see LA is still kind of holding on to the fear factor that government likes to rule us by.
Well, you moved from California, is that right? You were.
Well, we like to say we escaped 5.5 years ago.
Probably better. Yeah.
We went from the worst governor in the country for the best governor. We're in the free state of Florida.
Love it.
It's funny. We're building a house in Tennessee, and that was totally, we were almost in North Carolina, and then we were like, oh my goodness, 2020 hit and we were like, yeah, we're not going there. It's such a difference, you know, depending on where you're at. So
yeah, especially if you homeschool, you know.
Yep. That's us.
We do. Yeah, we do too. So yeah, North Carolina just seemed like a great decision for that reason. So
Tennessee, baby.
Yeah. Tennessee or Florida?
Tennessee's good. Well, you got Texas, Tennessee, and Florida. We got all of us are about 1,000 people a day moving, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
You look at 8 million people have left the state of California the last 10 years, 8 million tax-paying people. And so initially you got to go, maybe they wake up eventually, but then you realize, no, they're doing it on purpose for whatever reasons. I'd still like to know why, but they're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you find moving from, you know, Los Angeles, where you're the hub of the entertainment industry, and then going to Florida, how do you find that with getting jobs still in the industry? Because you still act and produce and do all that stuff, right?
Well, let me put it this way. 12 years ago, my agent of a long time, ICM, they called me in and said they can't work with me anymore because I'm a Christian and a conservative. And I laughed at them. I said, you know, this business up until the 60s was pretty conservative and it was pretty Christian. Hollywood used to do family movies and faith movies. The 60s kind of changed everything, I think, with the, it was a crazy decade with the Vietnam War, with the racial issues, with Martin Luther King and the Kennedy brothers dying and rock and roll becoming very political and just expanding and growing at that time. And Hollywood started doing movies that celebrate the anti-hero. But I still love the industry. So my wife and I formed SorboStudios.com. It's an independent movie production house, and we've been doing our own movies for the last, for the last 10, 12 years. And a lot of other independents come at me now. So I've been averaging, since I left Hollywood, I've shot well over 50 movies.
Wow.
And I was, most of the movies I was filming, even before the whole Hollywood cancel culture, I'm the first cancel culture person before I think it became a term. And everything I shot was in Texas or further east. Nothing shoots in California, pretty much just sitcoms in the studios. I mean, everything's in Georgia. Georgia's number one in the country for filming. Toronto's huge. Vancouver's huge because the tax credits and everything. And Alabama's getting bigger. Texas is getting bigger. Nashville's got a new tax credit coming in. So nothing shoots that much here. So for me, it didn't matter. I've not missed a beat. Am I not getting invited anymore to do big television series or big movies? Yeah, of course, but that's okay. I don't care. Hollywood doesn't owe me anything. I love the industry. I'm still making a career, but I'm doing movies I want to do that have love and hope, redemption, faith, laughter, things that Hollywood used to do. I'm trying to battle the horrible culture that Hollywood is winning because they got the big money. They got the big money and the big money to promote and through advertising.
Well, I love what you're seeing because you remember, sounds like that's why you got into it. How did you get into it to begin with, acting?
Well, it's a silly story. I grew up in a little town about 25 miles west of Minneapolis. It's on beautiful Lake Minnetonka, my little town of 7,000 people. We were home to Tonka Toys, Lake Minnetonka, Tonka Toys, get it? And so I was a jock, football, basketball, baseball. I was my whole life, you know, I'm the fourth of five kids, four boys in a family, very competitive. When I was 11 years old, our school took a trip to the Guthrie Theater. People that know theater know the Guthrie Theater. It's a very famous theater. A lot of Broadway plays start there. A lot of Broadway actors come out to perform. And the play was The Merchant of Venice. It was Shakespeare. And I was 11. I don't know what the heck they were saying because I was 11 and it was Shakespeare. But I was completely mesmerized by the actors on stage. And I told my mom on the way home, she was one of the chaperones. I said, I'm going to be an actor, Mom. And she said, that's nice, dear. A little pat on the leg, you know. But the seed was set, you know. And I kind of, you know, played around doing theater, little plays in school. And when I went to college, I had a double business major, but I had a minor in drama because I knew what I wanted to do. And Minneapolis, St. Paul is home to a lot of big corporations, headquartered. You got Best Buy, Target, 3M, Pillsbury, General Mills. I mean, there's so many companies. So I got an agent and I did a lot of commercials during my college years. So I got that. They were all union. So I got that all important Screen Actors Guild card. And so I had no problem moving to LA and getting an agent right away. That was easy because I already had a great tape and I had the SAG card. The harder thing was kind of breaking into the movie and TV world. But I got an agent. And within about a year after down there, and I started getting, you know, a lot of auditions. But obviously, my big break came with Hercules and 7 years in New Zealand and being part, I know it's the pride of, it's a sin of pride, but it became the most watched show in the world by season three. And we held that title for 5 years in 176 countries. It was crazy.
Wow.
It was definitely New Zealand, Kevin. No, I'm kidding.
Man, New Zealand, beautiful.
It was. That set was amazing. It really was. Yep. You could not remember it. Yeah.
Well, Peter Jackson would come on the set a lot because he was writing the trilogy for Lord of the Rings around that time. And he wanted to see how the crew was developing because they'd never had anything remotely like that in their country to build up, you know, whatever, it's other actors, camera operators, soon get sound guys. So we kind of, and we had two spinoff shows. And so we employed a lot of people, like over 700 people, I think it was.
So what I was wondering, when you think about, you know, Hercules, sure. When did you first start to get a bad taste in your mouth about what was going on in Hollywood?
Well, you know, Hercules, I was pretty much isolated. And I got to tell you, through the fan mail coming and everything, I had nothing to do with the writing. I mean, I would always do little rewrites and things like that. And I always wanted to put in more humor into the show because I think it was certainly a type of show that people could laugh at instead of laugh with. We want to make sure they laugh with us. And they put a lot of moral messages in there for a mythological show. And you got it through all the kids that would write in and talk about that, you know, I don't want to be a bully anymore. I don't have to fight anymore because of what you're showing me. And every movie I've been doing since then, I get 1, 2, 3 people coming up and say, your show got me to work out. I became a stunt guy because of you. I became an actor because of you. Because, you know, Walt Disney back in the 50s said movies and television can influence our youth. And he was certainly right. And, you know, it can be for good or bad, just like the internet. I think the internet's the Wild West. Unfortunately, there's a lot of crap on the internet. But there's a lot of good things about it as well. But it was really what they were doing with that, I think, was a positive thing. And I was, you know, I was in New Zealand for 7 years, 10 months a year. So I didn't really, I wasn't in Hollywood. I was getting invited to a lot of movie premieres, but I couldn't go to anything. But for me, it was sort of isolation being in that country so far away. And then I got another series right after that, even before Hercules finished its 7th season. I moved up to Vancouver, Canada for 5 years, filming Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, which was the first show he created after Star Trek. He wrote it back in 1969. So my captain, Dylan Hunt, was the first captain after Captain Kirk. And that was cool for me because as a kid, I grew up watching all the reruns of the original Star Trek series.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in Vancouver myself, and that's a beautiful place.
Beautiful place, yeah.
It really is. And the Chinese food is, it's crazy, but you've seen what's happened to it since then, you know, with just,
well, they call it Hong-couver.
Yeah. Hong-couver. and they have almost like a tent city there now, you know, it's just taken over the town. So it's been a lot of negative things since I was there.
Oh, no question. Well, we just got 30,000 more Chinese that just came across the border into San Diego. I'll explain that one to me. So a lot of, and all men, all fighting age men. I mean, it's crazy what we're doing in the country, but that's a whole other thing. We can talk about the border another time.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely what's on everybody's mind. Absolutely.
Of course.
You know, most of us know, and especially us Christians, we know that, you know, unfortunately, you know, with everything that's happened in your career, you end up getting kind of blacklisted, you know, by Hollywood. How would you say that some of that happened?
Well, I kind of just explained it. I mean, they got tired of what I was writing on the internet. I wasn't writing anything angry. I was writing things that were, you know, they hate the truth in Hollywood, just like DC. They don't like the truth. That's kryptonite to them. I mean, I got banned from Facebook. I had over 3 million followers on Facebook 3 years ago because I was posting a lot of stuff that other doctors were saying about wearing masks and about the shots and about everything. And I got taken down for misinformation and conspiracy theories. Of course, everything now is coming out that everything I was saying was true. So on Twitter, I posted, or I should say X, I posted, I need more conspiracy theories because all of mine keep coming true.
Seriously. And there's no recourse for that either.
But no, it's pathetic. Fauci should be in jail and so should Gates. And what they did to the world is unbelievable. I mean, Costco was essential. Target was essential. But all these, you know, corner stores that have been around 60 years for people to get coffee or groceries, they took them down because that wasn't essential. People lost everything. Yeah. And it's incredible. In fact, I golf a lot. And my new effort on the golf course is Fauci. Because it's got an F, it's got a U, and it's got a C in it, so it's close enough. Funny.
We're going to start using that. We feel exactly the same way about it. Yeah, so...
What are you talking about?
Right, Fauci, my favorite, 3 masks. Don't just wear 1, wear 3. What?
Well, yeah. Dr. Dennis is an avid golfer, by the way, so...
Well, we'll have to set up on golf. I love golf.
Yeah, definitely. Great. We were asking you a number of questions. I know we're asking you a number of questions about Hollywood, but you brought up something that interests me.
Sure.
That was 30,000. I believe early it was about 42,000, if I'm not mistaken, young Chinese fighting age men coming here. And I've asked people questions like, do you really think that men would just be able to leave China if they decided they wanted to leave? And surprisingly, some people would say, well, if that was their choice. And so what I'll do is I'll go to North Korea. I'll go to North Korea. And then I'll ask, what type of government do they have? Some people are afraid to be wrong, so they'll think. And they'll just think. Really, they're afraid to be wrong. And so they come out communist. Okay, I'll say, now, what type of government does Cuba have? I'll say, okay, communist. Can they just leave those countries? The answer is no. As a matter of fact, in North Korea, you'll most likely get shot. I was in Europe. I was in Berlin when they had the wall up. And yeah. If you ever been there with the wall, you had guards up there. You had minefields there. You had glass in the wall. And you died. And it wasn't the people that were on the west side that were trying to get to the east, but the people of the east trying to get to the west. So communism, they hold their people. So I'll go on to ask the question, well, okay, what type of government does China have? Do you know what CCP means? Surprisingly, a lot of Americans will say no. And then so I go in and I don't really get all into it, but I'll say, well, simply put, I'll say that that is a communist country and they're not just going to release their manpower. Mm. So if they're going to get here, it is either going to have to be because they are intentionally sending them here with a purpose, okay, or they're getting rid of criminals or whatever. But when you look at so many young men coming from a communist nation to a country that's supposed to be a constitutional republic, you see them coming to a country like that, you need to know that there is a problem and it's within their government. And if it's within their government and it's happening, then we have to ask ourselves the question, where is our government on this? I'm saying that to lay this out and ask you, what is your take on that?
Well, I agree with you 100%. I got a buddy I golf with. He's from Toronto, but he lives down here pretty much full time in Florida. He's got a furniture business. He does a lot of business over in China. And he's just the other day, he said exactly what you just said. He goes, when you're traveling just within China, the amount of, like, from province to province or whatever, the amount of paperwork you have to get and papers you have to get to even move within your own country is unbelievable. So I have tens of thousands of these fighting age Chinese come through our border. They were sent over here by their government. I tell people all the time, I said, you got to know, how ignorant can you be of what communism and socialism is all about? Those two things killed, 100 million people in the last century. And for these people coming across the border like that, nobody's saying anything. It's scary to me. And I said, you got to understand, they rule with the iron hand of communism over their people. But the government of China is very capitalistic. Let's face it. They love bringing in money. I think most of our debt is probably owned to China. They just bought up 450,000 acres of farmland. They're using that farmland, but to bring food back to their own people. They're not here to benefit us. And I think one of the biggest problems in America is its own greed. And then I think apathy is a big killer with the normal person out there, because we have so many sheep out there that let government rule them. And people got to, I'm here to wake up the lions. We got to fight back, because it's unbelievable what we're doing in this country. It's amazing. And to have, Trump's 4 years in office, 1.4 million people came across the border. We're well over 10 million people coming across this border. 10 million in 3 years. And you got to be kidding me that people are sitting around. I've had people get in my face and argue, we should have opened borders. And I go, wait a minute, let me ask you one question. When you go to bed at night, do you guys lock your house up? And they go, well, of course we do. I go, oh, so that's interesting. Why are you locking up your house? Well, then they start thinking about it. Well, when people breaking in, I go, well, America is a house and we got 10 million people coming across here. There's a woman that said, I looked at her. She was a fan until I said, we need to close our border. And she turned 180 on me. And she goes, we should have open borders. And I said, tell you what if you went home right now and there were five illegal aliens in your living room? She said, I'd let them stay. And I just started laughing. And I said, fine, give me your address, because in Santa Monica alone, I see them in every corner looking for a job. And they would love to stay with you. I said, it cracks me up that you guys want to come across as the people that care so much more. Meanwhile, your relatives came over Christmas. After 3 days, you're ready for them to go home. So don't give me this crap that you'd let these people stay in your house. I mean, they project this thing that they care so much more, that they're the party with the heart, when really they're the party of violence, anger, and hate.
Absolutely. And thank God our governor signed a bill yesterday about the squatting. Did you see that?
I heard about that.
Yes. Yeah. So he signed a bill to so they can't do squatting in their houses in Florida.
Well, it's insane that you can do it anyway.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy.
They got the same problem in New Zealand. If somebody has a cabin out in the bush somewhere and they show up there because they haven't been there in 4 months and people are in there, they can't move them out. And I said, that makes no sense to me. It makes who came up with that law to begin with?
It is insane. And then there was the one sheriff, I think, I don't know if it was Polk County or one of the counties, that said that we prefer that you shoot them, taxpayers some money.
That sounds like Grady.
I was like, wow, okay.
There you go.
To me, it's tragic when you think that 9/11, the big banner was we would never forget. And the banner above that was that we united, we were standing. So 26 people supposedly did that to us. What can 10 million people do, Kevin?
Well, yeah. Oh, I there's no question. They've already admitting that there's at least 160,000 unaccounted for that snuck across the border. And then they think another 500,000 of that 10 million are more than likely terrorists and evil for the country. So I think we're going to have a massive 9/11 on our hand where they're going to hit 30 of the biggest cities all at the same time on the same date. And people will scratch their heads. How did this happen? And it's just incredible that we're that stupid and that ignorant to let this happen to our country. But we're living in pretty dangerous times right now.
Yeah, we totally agree. There's a Trojan horse in every city of America at this point. And they're really just waiting to open the doors.
Sure.
And the electrical system alone really sets us up for that. So when you start, you know, after what happened to your career after Andromeda, what happened in that period of time?
Well, I was busy all the time. I was working like crazy within the Hollywood system. I mean, things were fun because that series ended in 2005. So from 1993 to 2005, I had 12 years of nonstop work within my two series. But I still was averaging 3-4 movies a year, staying busy, shooting 4 weeks here, 6 weeks there, wherever it was. It was 2012 when my agent and I parted ways and I formed Sorbo Studios. So we've just been doing it on our own since then, and it's been fine by me. And the move was great. We talked about moving out here for years because we both had family out in Florida. We've been out here many times. And I just got to a point hating the traffic of L.A., hating the taxes. You know, I said, why am I dropping 13.5 cents of every dollar when I shoot everything out of the state anyway? And I think we would have came earlier. It just had to get to a point, I think, when both my wife and I just reached a boiling point, said enough is enough. So we left. We got, you know, we sold it. We had a great house. I loved where I lived. I was an hour and a half north of L.A., an hour and a half south of Santa Barbara. Great areas. It was at least 50% conservative in that area. Loved our church. Had a great church there. Pastor Rob McCoy, the Calvary Church there. He does a lot of work, actually, with – he's coming to the event, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. That was my old pastor.
Wow.
You probably didn't know that.
No, that you said it was a small world.
Yeah. No, because he does a lot of work at Charlie Kirk at Turning Point USA as well, as does my son, Braden, who's 22. Charlie took him under his wing. Charlie and I both spoke at Liberty University about 4 years ago. No, it's 5 years ago already now. And they both just hit it off. So he gets invited to all the Turning Point events, and he's got a booth. He's got a great book. As you know, it's Braden Sorbo, so his initials are BS. So he wrote a book, The BS Guide to Politics for Young People.
Oh my goodness.
Homeschooling rocks. I love it.
So we recently did an episode about Satanism in Hollywood and in the music industry. So because now since Sound of Freedom, right, there's been conversations like this happening. People are openly acknowledging that this stuff exists, even in Hollywood. Were you ever offered or approached to participate in any satanic ritual or anything like that? No.
I knew it existed out there, but no, people pretty much knew. I mean, it's like when I walk in a room with a bunch of gay people, they pretty much know I'm straight right away. So it is not something I would ever get involved in, not thing any curiosity about. I've been a Christian my whole life. So, you know, and I've been vocal about it on the internet. So to me, it's not something I hide away from, but I knew all about the sex trafficking. I didn't know names. There were rumors of names. And I think Hollywood is still protecting itself pretty hardcore. Look, the Harvey Weinstein thing, that stuff goes on all the time. And this hashtag Me Too thing. So where were these people 30 years ago? Why didn't they come out 30 years ago? Why did they wait? You know, 30 years later, he flirted with me. And you're going, oh my gosh. I mean, it's just insane what we're doing right now with this stuff. But, you know, all Hollywood knew it, and that he's not the only guy that was doing it. And, you know.
Did you see the raid on P. Diddy's home?
Yeah. He took off on his private plane. I heard he's down in Antigua or something. I don't know how you can hide down there, but obviously that's, you know, Mel Gibson has mentioned a number of times he's going to break out a lot of news about a lot of people. But, you know, it's like these people that say, you know, I if I die, I didn't commit suicide. And, you know, how many people around the Clintons committed suicide, apparently? It's like 57 is the number or whatever. But one of the things I tweeted during COVID, I said, if you want to get rid of COVID, tell the Clintons that COVID's got something on them.
That's funny. That's good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, we see this stuff in Hollywood, and you're kind of positioned now, like you said, to do movies the way they should be done, you know, something positive. So tell us how you got motivated to do that.
Well, I think my really first faith-based movie, unapologetically faith-based movie, is called What If? And that's the same writers that years later I did God's Not Dead. God's Not Dead became a huge hit. I mean, with $2 million budget, made $140 million. So, you know, it shows you, you need word of mouth though in independent movies, because Hollywood does $300 million movies, these Avatar and Avengers and Spider-Man, and then they have $100 million to promote it. You know, but those movies need to make $700, $800 million to break even, but they keep making $2 billion worldwide, so they're going to keep making those movies. $2 million budget, I don't have $100 million to promote it, so we need word of mouth. And What If was like, I love this movie, and it's actually directed by Dallas Jenkins, who's doing The Chosen now. His father, Jerry Jenkins, who wrote the Left Behind books, was the guy who funded it. I've done over 80 movies. What If is in my top three. I think it's a much better movie than God's Not Dead, and it's just an amazing movie. And I keep telling Dallas, get it out in theaters. You got so much money coming in from The Chosen now. Put $2 million into it. You can get to 1,500 movie screens and let people see this movie. Because even though it's 14 years old now, it doesn't age. I've aged, but the movie itself doesn't look like, oh, that's an old movie. It fits common day right now, but it's a wonderful movie. John Ratzenberger is in it. He's awesome. It's like a reverse It's a Wonderful Life. John Ratzenberger plays an angel. It's come to show me that I need a better road to walk on, but I like the road I'm on. So I go to this alter universe, kicking and screaming. But Christy Swanson's in it. It's just a fantastic movie. And that made me want to do more movies. And then I did Soul Surfer, the Bethany Hamilton story with Dennis Quaid and Helen Hunt. And I did God's Not Dead. And then I did a movie my wife wrote called Let There Be Light, which was funded by Sean Hannity. And everything we've done in Sorbo Studios, movies that I've directed. Last year, we had Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist I directed. We had Miracle in East Texas that I directed. All those things got funded every time it was a God thing. Because it's shocking to me how hard it is to raise $3 million for good movies when Hollywood throws hundreds of millions of dollars at other movies. And I golf with very strong conservative Christian guys that are very wealthy. And $3 million to them would be like, you know, a $300 to me. And yet I can't get them to invest. Well, it's just not what I do. And I go, yeah, but you put $9 million under Rick Santorum's failed presidency. What did you get back from that? Here, I can guarantee you, you'll get your $3 million back. You may not make $100 million on it, but you'll get your money back. And then there'll be a movie out there forever that has a positive message. So that is the toughest thing for independent producers like myself, is to raise that money for these movies. I've got the scripts. Now it's just a matter of finding the money.
Do you find that changing, though, with The Sound of Freedom having gotten such a large audience? Do you see at all that attitude?
Well, it shouldn't change with God's Not Dead then. We had a 70 times return on its money. Sound of Freedom had a 4 times return on its money. Sound of Freedom needed to get to $65 million to break even.
Wow.
So that was a whole different ballgame with that movie. And for 5.5 years, they couldn't find a distributor. They shot that 5.5 years ago. Jim Caviezel, I've known Jim forever. We had the same manager for a very long time. We were neighbors in Westlake Village, Thousand Oaks, California for 10 years. They shot that movie. They couldn't get it out there. Angel has the power right now with this whole Chosen thing. They finally got the movie and they said, okay, we'll do it. And they went out to their followers, which they have millions of, and they said, put $5 into this so we can get in theaters, and then go make sure you go to theaters. Well, that's what happened. And why it got a second kick, what helped it the most, is Hollywood came out against the movie. They were basically saying, wait a minute, we like having sex with 7-year-old kids. I mean, that's really what they're saying. And you got the majority of people in the world, I don't care where you are politically, religiously, whatever, most people in the world do not agree to having sex with little children. So that made people on both sides of the aisle go support this movie. So it was brilliant endorsement from Hollywood, even though they didn't realize they were giving an endorsement. But it's not changing. It's still the same thing. It's tough. There's only a handful of people out there able to raise the Irwin brothers. You know, I can only imagine things like that. They're about to start a miniseries on the life of David, and they're going to be shooting that. I believe they're shooting that in Greece.
When is this movie, The Firing Squad, coming?
August 9th is what I've heard so far. And that's my most recent one that we've been doing screenings on across the country. True story set in Indonesia. My character was a guy that killed somebody when he was in his mid-20s on the beaches of Indonesia, and he gets arrested, he puts in prison, he gets the firing squad. He's there for decades, and during that time, he found God and became a pastor, preaching to the inmates, preaching to the prisoners, and he was assassinated in 2015, or a firing squad in 2015, so it's pretty recent. So I hope people will check that out. It's a good movie. I got a documentary with him as well. And it was done with Epic Times, which is, I think, the fourth largest internet paper right now, independent news agency. And I did two things with them. I got a documentary that is out right now. If they go to Epic TV, and it's called Hollywood Takeover. So if they go to HollywoodTakeover.com, speaking of China, it's about the Chinese control over Hollywood, which they have a huge control over Hollywood and what they can put out there. They will not bring movies. They would not let any movies coming into China that depicts communism in a bad way, and certainly China in a bad way. So Hollywood is bent over backwards to do whatever China tells them to do. And they're trying to make China look like this great place to go live. And that's what they're doing through the movies, very subliminally, but they're doing it. And it's interesting. Ricky Gervais used to be the host, I think, 5 years in a row on the Golden Globes, and he laughed about it. He said, I don't know why you guys keep bringing me back, because he's not afraid to go after the A-list actors, directors, suits in Hollywood. And his last time he did it, he called them a bunch of whores. He said, right there on live TV, he said, if ISIS had a film fund, you'd be the first to line up, get the money. So, and it's a lot of truth to that as well.
So was it pretty natural for you to transition from being an actor to, you know, then a director and then a producer? Did that all pretty natural for you, or...
Well, yeah, because I'm on the set all the time, you know, so you learn everything. I mean, Hercules, by season three, I asked Universal Studios, can I start directing on the series? And they said, yeah, go for it. And, you know, I knew my crew. I knew everybody. You know, to me, it's like, I know what I want visually. I can look at this stuff and say what I want. And then I go to the experts behind the camera and say, I want this, or I want that, or I want this time of day to have. And they would sit there and, well, we can't do it at 2, but we can do it at 5, you know. And it was great. It was on-hand learning. And very comfortable for me. So it was an easy thing to do. I love directing. If you're going to say I got to do one or the other, I'll take acting still. That's still a passion for me. I still love doing what I'm doing. But the directing part, I think if you look at some of the best movie makers out there, and I think they're actors or former actors, Clint Eastwood, Mel Gibson. I mean, just Hacksaw Ridge, you know, all the movies that he's been part of and done. Hell, I'm talking to Mel right now about the insurrection. I hope that I get a role in it. I told him, I said, we talked about an hour about the screenplay. He and his brother have been writing it for 5 years now. And I said, well, Jim Caviezel's in his 50s now. He's not the same age that Jesus was when he did it last time. He goes, well, you can't believe what we can do in visual effects now. So they're going to make Jim look like he's 32 again.
Wow. See, Dennis, there's hope for me and you, brother.
Yeah. Put a virtual wig on us. Yes.
Good deal. So of course we're having you at the Save Our Children conference, and how have you seen Hollywood? And I know with your movies you're trying to have these better examples, but what have you seen happening to our children with respect to Hollywood?
Well, what do they do? Let me take sitcoms, for instance. Over the last 50 years they've been degrading the family, bombing the family, saying the family's not important. I mean, you look at most sick, the dad's kind of chunky and out of shape. The mom's a babe. The teenage kids use dad as a pincushion and make fun of him. So we're sitting there slowly telling his kids over these last two generations that the father's not important in the family. And, you know, look what we did to the black community. I mean, the Welfare Reform Act back in 64 didn't do the black population any favors. I mean, the black population was far better to stay together, husband and wife, than the whites were. But now it's like 80-85% of the black kids are being raised without a father. And you see the repercussions of that. And, you know, Dr. Dozier, I know that you know this. You know what's going on in these families. And it's a cycle that's tough to break. And it's proof of fact that it's very important to have families together. But, you know, the white families, the other families aren't doing the same thing either. I mean, there's more and more breakups. There's more and more later marriage. There's more and more later not having kids. And it's a whole different thing out there. BLM came out. Their manifesto on BLM, which I still have, they took it down, was number one, get rid of God. Get rid of the family unit.
Yeah.
They moved to Marxism and socialism. They wanted to get rid of, they said pregnancy is slavery for women. And I said, okay, so 100 years from now, if nobody has babies starting right now, there'll be no lives, humans left on this planet. So it's just amazing to me. And what did they do? What did those... They were transgenders. That were like, the, I think, two of the three people leading the BLM march. And what do they do for Black communities? Nothing. They went and bought more homes and took a bunch of vacations. I mean, it's just, it's incredible to me. And the violence that goes on, I got followed for the first time on X from Elon Musk because he retweeted one of my posts because it showed BLM at an event. I can't remember what city, maybe it was Minneapolis or something. And they were attacking people coming out of this meeting. I think it was for pro-life or something. And I said, there they are, the left, showing how tolerant they are once again. And Elon Musk did a repost of it, which is pretty cool.
Thanks. So you were saying that you have a lot of things coming up in regards to doing a tour and talking. Why are you so passionate about these issues?
Because I don't know. I think a lot of it was instilled in my parents. My parents were always about hard work. I grew up with a lot of money. My dad was a public school teacher with five kids. You know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I mean, it was, my memory of my father at the end of every month just anguishing over the last $3 he had in his checking account until he got paid on the first. And he'd yell at the four boys of his, can you stop drinking so much milk, drink more water? But I remember that. But still, I never felt without. You know, we had a small house. You know, I was in a room with my two other brothers, bunk beds were crammed in there. But we had loving parents. They were churchgoers, had a great community of support within the school system, with the athletic system. It was, you know, I was very fortunate to have the area that I grew up in. My best friends to this day are buddies I've had since, you know, kindergarten, guys I've known my whole life. So I think that was hugely instrumental to me. My dad always was about hard work. Don't expect handouts. You know, he had to work another job. He started summers. He worked at a golf course to keep some kind of income coming. And that's how we all got hooked on golfing, because he said, take advantage of this, because we could never afford public golf courses. And so all five kids ended up working out there for at least 3-4 summers each, you know, behind the counter, mowing the fairways, mowing green. So that's my love affair with that, with golf happened because of my dad. But it was, you know, it just, I've always been a guy that says, you know, why can't we have both sides of the issue? I'm for free speech. I don't have an anger towards somebody that's has a liberal point of view, or that's is an atheist. Let's have a talk. Just if you want to yell at me, that doesn't make you right. Can we have a civil conversation about this instead of getting all crazy in each other's face? But that side, I mean, that the party of the left has just changed so much. I mean, Dennis Miller's a good friend. John Voight's a good friend. They said the party left me. I didn't leave it. I tell people all the time, look at JFK's inauguration speech in 1960 and ask if there's one Democrat who talks that way today, or even half the Republicans don't. Everything is shifting more and more and more to the left. And JFK, what's on his gravestone? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. There's no Democrat talking that way. I honestly believe our government today is worse than the British monarchy that was, we started a revolution with. Far more things with the tax. What was it? 2% tax we were fighting about? I mean, it is horrible what they've done to us now. I mean, the tax situation alone, they're saying, you work 7 months for us, we'll let you keep the money from the other 5 months. Okay. And have a good time. But I mean, this is crazy what we're doing. And people just let them do it because they keep taking an inch all the time. And now it's miles. You know, it's like Scrooge. How many more links are you going to put onto your chain behind you?
Well, I want to know when you became a Christian.
My whole life. There was no, I just grew up with it. It's always been there. I grew up in a Lutheran church, typical Norwegian, Scandinavian kid. I mean, that was our church. I went non-denominational for a long time as well. But then I went to Calvary the last 15 years. But surprisingly, it's the same God.
Thank goodness, right?
But I just, it's always been there for me. I think if there was a turning point, there were two things that happened when I was 13 years old. We had a youth pastor come in when I was 13. So for 13 to 18-year-olds, 7th through 12th grade, Wednesday at our church was a place called The Room. And it was all for teenagers, boys and girls. And Pastor Lee was this guy in his mid-20s, and he was like this cool guy. Because my pastor was a much older guy when I was, you know, Pastor Sanders scared the hell out of me. And this guy was like breathing as a sin. But Pastor Lee came along, and he was a guy that you could easily talk to. And he brought the Bible into our world, into the modern world we're living in, and showed us how it related. And then also that same year, we went to see the Reverend Billy Graham speak at the St. Paul Fairgrounds. And it was a hot August night. There was a full moon out, and it's 300,000 people. It was amazing to be in this. And we took like 7 buses from our church to go. And at the end, he said, I got a lot of volunteers up. If you want to come up and talk and pray, whatever, please come up. 13, I never would have done this. I mean, I was an A and B student, but I was the last guy to raise my hand. I was, if they called on me, I just told myself to be ready in class. But I went up. I remember one of my buddies said, where are you going? I don't know, gotta go up there. And I'm sitting on the grass and I'm talking to this guy who was like maybe 30. I was 13, so he's like this really old guy, 30, right? And all of a sudden a hand went on my head and I turned around and it was the Reverend Billy Graham. And he had his bodyguards with him. I get it. You know, he's a man that there are a lot of people hated believing in God, right? And we started talking. His head was perfectly behind the moon. So it was like these rays came out of his head. And I told that story in the Larry King show years ago. And back, I don't know, it was 2007 or 8 or whatever it was. And I get a call from Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I think the headquarters are in New Jersey, if I remember right. And they said, look, we saw this story. And Larry Ross, who did, he lives in Dallas, has been years been running the Billy Graham publicity campaign. And he said, we saw the story. The Reverend Graham saw you talking on Larry King, and he loved it. Would you write a story? We're doing a hardcover book. The only time they've ever done a hardcover book for Chicken Soup of the Soul. So I'm in the one, I'm writing a story about 13 years old. I was 13. So I'm in that hardcover book with Mother Teresa and all these other people, you know, that were touched by Billy Graham. And then they called me up and they said, you know, he's a big fan of everything you stand for. He's in his 90s. He can't travel. He was wondering if we'll fly you around. We'll take care of everything. Would be the publicity on the book. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool to be part of that. And I've been very good friends with Franklin Graham's son for many years now.
Well, you know, we have the pleasure of having your wife on here tomorrow. And so, you know, we're going to ask these questions. But so my wife and I, we're like, anytime we see couples like yourself, like here you are, you're flying around, you've got movies you're producing, all the speed. How do you make this marriage work?
Well, Sorbo Studios, we work together. Her office is right next to mine, too. So,
no, she would need another building. Is how far apart?
Her office is much bigger, but you know. On the sets where we produce together, do we butt heads? You better believe we do. But, you know, there's a great movie called Shenandoah starring Jimmy Stewart. And there's a great scene in there where this guy from the Confederate Army comes up the steps and wants to marry his daughter. And he says, why do you want to marry my daughter? He says, well, because I love her. He goes, yeah, that's nice. But do you like her? And I think that's more than anything. I think love can be a very liquid emotion, but you got to be able to like each other. And there's got to be, you know, so I like her a whole lot. And she's a great mother. She's smart as hell. She's the business side of Sorbo Studios. I'm more the creative side, even though she's a very talented actress in her own right. But it's we can butt heads, but we get along pretty fine. 26 years married now, 28 years together. And every anniversary, she says, I'm going to give you one more year. I said, okay, thank you.
That's success, baby. That's success.
How did you guys meet, Kevin?
Well, she hates when I say this, but there's a lot of truth to it. Every episode of Hercules, they sent down a very pretty girl to work with me, and they'd be down there for about 2.5 weeks. So it was a great dating service for me. And that's how I met my wife. She came down at the end of season 4, and that was it for me. And really, I mean, honestly, that was it. And it took me a week to talk her into going out with me down there in New Zealand. And I said, come on, we'll go see a movie and stuff. And so I go pick her up and she gets in the car and I had country music on. She goes, country music? I said, yeah, you know, I like everything except rap. And I'm not a big rap guy. But she goes, no, I like country music. You can keep it on. And then we're talking and talking some more. And then she looked at me and she said, are you conservative? Because I don't hide that. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm definitely conservative. And she said, well, so am I. And then I said something and she said, wait a minute, you're a Christian? I go, yeah, I'm very much a Christian. Been one of my life. She said, hold on, Kevin. I realized it's that first date, but country music, Christian, conservative, the three C's. I think I'm in love with you. That's how we started dating. That was our first date.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
Notice she didn't say ridiculously good looking, right?
Nothing at all. She didn't say anything at all. She just it was just that. And then she was on a series called Chicago Hope at the time.
Yeah,
ER came out around the same year, and she had like a week off, and I had taken off for Bratislava, Slovakia, and Croatia to shoot a movie for 3 months. And it was the only time Universal gave me an extra month to film this movie with Rafael De Laurentiis. It's called Cull the Conqueror. Cull was the father of Conan in the books, and so I invited her over, and I said, "Look, my dad's flying in the same time you are. My dad will be here the whole time. You'll be safe, you know, because we only really knew each other those 2.5 weeks on the set, but we just hit it off." So she came over and something my dad, I'd never seen him do before. in a first time introduction, certainly I introduced, I said, this is my dad, this is Sam. And he hugged her. And I went, and that kind of took me back as well. And after that week and a half together, because we had a 4-day weekend. So we, from Bratislava, it's like an hour straight west, you get into Vienna. And I lived in Vienna for a while. I spent 3.5 years living in Europe, by the way. And so we went, just had a great time taking my dad to all these places that I'd been to. And she knew it very well. She speaks 5 languages fluently, by the way. So she was speaking German for us. And so we were able to get the kind of food we wanted to get. And it was interesting when he left, my dad hugged me and he said, she's a keeper, Kev. And my dad's never said that about anyone. Because I had like a 5-year relationship and 2-3-year relationships with wonderful women. And I broke their hearts. I got to be honest with you. I just, for whatever reasons, I said it, I wasn't ready to get married. And it wasn't right. As great as these people were, it just wasn't right. So I guess I had to wait for the right person.
Wow. So how many, we're just curious, family life for you, if you don't mind talking about it. How many kids do you have and what's going on with them?
We got 3. Braden's 22. My son Shane is modeling in Italy right now. He's in Milan. He flies back this weekend. He's been there for about 3 months, I think. And he's almost 20. He turns 20 on Sunday. And then my daughter is 18. She's in her last year of homeschool. And we homeschooled them all. And they're great kids. Braden is a social media genius. In fact, I'm not going to name all the people he's doing their social media for, but he's got one client, which is Dinesh D'Souza. And I think you probably know who Dinesh is.
Wow.
He runs his social media. Oh, this kid's good. I'm 6'3", and both my kids are taller than me. They're 6'5", and 6'4". And Braden.
How do you spell that? My son is Braden.
We went old Irish Gaelic, so it's Braeden.
We got Ayde.
Yeah. Ay is probably the most common one I've seen. And then we got Shane, which I've always loved that name. And one of my best stunt guys, one of my best friends from New Zealand's name was Shane. So I always loved that Shane. So in Irish Gaelic, both of them. And Sam got the name, our daughter, and it's Octavia. And Sam's, you know, she was a biochemical engineering major at Duke University. I went to college to meet girls and play sports. We went to college for a completely different reason. But the way her brain works, when it came up, Octavia was she's a big fan of King Lear. She's a big fan of Shakespeare. So Octavia's in that. Octavia is the female instead of Octavio, which is male. And she's born in October, and she's the eighth grandchild of my parents.
What's that?
That's how her brain works to come up with Octavia.
Wow.
Yeah, she could be hired right away. She's got that organizational skills, you know?
Yeah, but I take care of all the travel stuff. If she had to book her own travel stuff, she'd be late for the plane every time. That's my job to take care of all that stuff. But she takes care of all the business. There's no question.
So, Kevin, I have to ask you about this sword you have over your right shoulder there. I noticed you got quite an interesting backdrop there.
Yeah, that was the very, very last day of 7 years of filming on Hercules.
Wow.
And the description says, you know, it's got my name on there and the 7 years, the years that we shot down there. And it says, you know, the journey may be over, but the legend lives on. That's a description on there. Awesome. So that was a huge chapter in my life. Because without that series, I wouldn't have anything else that has happened since then within the industry. And it was an honor being on that show. I worked with wonderful people. Most of my crew went on to work on Lord of the Rings and won Academy Awards from the wardrobe department and the props department and the visual effects guys, the Weta group that did all of our creatures. So it was pretty amazing. And I don't know if you can't quite see in that corner. It's me, Muhammad Ali right there.
Oh, wow.
And I got my mom and dad behind me right there. This is What If. We're at the Movie Guide Awards. Movie Guide Awards are family and faith movies. I won Best Actor in What If, and we won Best Movie of the Year for that year when that movie came out. And my dad passed about a year and a half after that. So my dad was my buddy. He was my best man at my wedding.
That's awesome. So I want to know, because Hercules really made you a household name. I mean, that's huge. I don't think you could talk to anyone and say Hercules, and you'd be the person that came to mind, even though there's been movies and other actors. Sure. You are Hercules to everyone. What was that like? How old were you? And what was that like? Because that had to be pretty amazing.
Well, I was all in my 30s. I mean, initially, when my agent called me, I'm 6'3", I was 225. I was ripped up, always working out, because, you know, there's so much rejection in Hollywood. You got to find an outlet somewhere. So mine was Gold's Gym and biking all the way down to Manhattan Beach and back every time back to Santa Monica where I first lived. My agent told me, they said they're not looking for a bodybuilder guy. They're looking for a decathlon type guy, a guy that's athletic. They don't want a no neck, 280 pound steroid dude. So they put me through 7 auditions. They auditioned 2,800 actors in North America, between Montreal and everything in Canada, to New York, to Chicago, whatever. And I had 7 callbacks. I was down the last 3 guys. And when I got the role, I was actually filming. I did the last audition scene at Universal lot, in front of about 50 television people there at Universal. And I flew out the next day to Vancouver to do an episode of a guest star on the Commish, Michael Chiklis' series, which was a Stephen Canal show back in the day. And they called me then that I got that role. And I walked up to Michael on set and I said, I don't want any more crap from you, dude. I'm half God now. So, but it was fun. And that opened up the door, obviously, for so many things. Initially, it was just going to be 5 2-hour movies. And halfway through the third movie, Universal called and said, there's nothing like it on TV. We're gonna have you stay there and make a series out of it. And that first year was amazing for me. And I know there's a lot of young people that wouldn't know who this person was, but I got a whole year working with Anthony Quinn, who played Zeus. And here's a guy that had 6 nominations for Oscars, won twice. And by season 3, like I said earlier, we became the most watched TV show in the world, which was pretty cool. And we had 2 spinoffs. We had Xena Warrior Princess, and then we had Young Hercules. A lot of people don't remember Young Hercules because that got canceled after 2 years. But the young unknown actor they booked to play me as a teenager was a 20-year-old actor by the name of Ryan Gosling.
Wow.
Was it really?
That's how we got to start.
Wow. That's insane.
So I was going to ask, you know, I'm sure sometimes you think about, well, what else would I do if I wasn't doing this? What could your next stage of your life look like?
Well, I mean, if I never pursued acting, I know what I wanted to do, what I would have done, but I was determined that I didn't want anything to fall back on. I was going to be an actor. I had a double business major, but I think if I did anything that they say you can never go into business, you can never be an actor, whatever, I probably would have followed my dad's footsteps and taught the high school level, because I would have wanted to coach football and basketball at the high school level.
That's cool. Well, you can see the movies you're making are still trying to reach, you know, those, you know, that community, you know, that family. And that's a powerful connection that you tend to want to be in.
Yeah. So I just asked, because we've seen several of your movies, and in quite a few of them, you kind of play the mean guy, right? Maybe the skeptic a bit, right?
And some I've done 87 movies. I played 3 mean guy roles.
Well, I'm just, you know, those are
we only like the mean guys.
Right. Well, because it seems like such a departure from anything we've seen you in. That's what sticks out, right? What do you like playing better? The nice guy or the guy?
Well, every mean guy I played, by the way, there was redemption for them.
Agree.
So as long as there's redemption in them, I don't want to play some mean guy the whole way through. I think that would be no fun. I want to see that. I want to let people know that there's always hope, that there's always a chance to change the road you're on, no matter how bad you think your life is and the world is. There is always hope. And I think that's what drew me to those characters. But yeah, I mean, there was only one role that I ever did that it was interesting. I played a serial killer in a movie called Julia X. And it won back in 20, I don't know what year it was, 10 in 2011 or something like that, it won the Austin Film Festival. But it was more like an very unusual love story, because it had a lot of humor in it. And it wasn't like a slasher thing. It was a twist of fate I get picked my victims through the internet dating service. And this one woman that I picked, she escapes, but she turns around and captures me. Ends up being that her and her sister are serial killers. Oh. So AI is a serial killer, picked a serial killer. And it ends up being a lot of dark humor. And it was interesting to play that role. But other than that, I think most of the roles I played, I like roles that have a lot of humor in them. I don't want, there's enough dark and anger and violence and hate and over-sexualization in movies and TV out there. So that's kind of what I like to pick right now. But I've got 4 movies in the can. I got 3 documentaries coming out that I'm looking forward to. I've got 3 more movies lined up this year I'm filming. I'm going to be filming in Slovakia again later this year. I'm going to be filming in Minnesota, my home state, on a car racing movie. It's called Speed Shift. And then I got a Christmas movie I'll be shooting as well. But I got another Christmas movie I already shot. Will be out November this year. And then I've got 2 documentaries I'm very excited about. I spent 3 weeks in Israel. I'm going back in May to one more week in Israel. And it deals with, through archaeological digs, we trace the flow of the Ark of the Covenant. And it's called The Quest for the Throne of God. And I love documentaries. It's fascinating. And then the other one, it's not really a follow-up one because I did it with the same company, Brent Miller's company called Ingenuity Films. So I highly recommend Before the Wrath. And Before the Wrath deals with the Second Coming. And I narrate it throughout, but we have a lot of like chosen type actors. We have scenes of that. Then we cut to current day scholars or whatever they may be, pastors, priests, whatever, talking about the Second Coming. And it's fascinating. Well, we just did a follow-up to it, and it deals with the Last Supper, and it's called Eating with the Enemy. And I love the title on this, and I was hoping it came out this week in Easter, but we still have two more interviews to do, and we still have a little bit of a voiceover left for me to do. So that'll come out later in the year.
Cool. Well, our theme at the Supernatural Junkies is to talk about what the church isn't talking about. So what would you say was maybe my final question, unless Dennis and Dr. Dozier jump in, what would you say is the thing the church and Christians are not talking about today?
Voting. More than 50% of Christians don't vote. Get out and vote. I mean, I realize with mail-in voting, there's always going to be cheating, which is unbelievable to me that 3 years later, we still haven't solved this easy issue. And there's nothing racist about showing an ID to vote either. It's crazy. And the trouble is, when I speak a lot of these churches I go to, I say, you know, you guys have to remember, you as pastors, that you work for God, not government, because there's a lot of crazy woke churches out there right now, too. And people need to wake up. We need to wake up the sheep. The sheep are just insane right now. And they're just like, they just follow anything and everything everybody tells them. They've totally given in to government, letting control their lives. So to me, it's like, stop being afraid. Stop letting people set your limitations, especially yourself.
So Kevin, I didn't see Dr. Dozier, and go ahead, Dennis.
I'd say a follow up on that. I think COVID instilled more fear into the church, and for to see that the church, churches closed, not all of them, but I think that fear that was instilled is still there. And
they closed the churches on purpose, didn't they? That would have been essential. The liquor store was essential. The strip clubs were essential. I mean, it is blatantly obvious what they're doing. And people still just kind of go, yes, whatever you say, we'll close the church down. My pastor, Rob McCoy, he'll probably talk about it when we have the event coming up. He came back online. He said, I'll give you your 15 days, but then we're back having the church. And they sat there and were fining him every week. Pretty soon, hundreds of people were showing up outside in the parking lot. They couldn't fit everybody in the church. They put speakers out there. And he ended up winning the court case. Didn't have to pay any of those fines.
Good.
So, Kevin, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And the last question is, how can we pray for you? You got so many irons in the fire. And we're thankful for what you're doing, for what you're doing with your faith and bringing that to the world with movies and also with actions. And so how can we pray for you, Kevin?
Well, you know, really comes down to, you know, help me find the funding that we need to make these movies. Because I get pastors stop me all the time and say, what you're doing is great. You reach a much bigger audience than I do. And I said, I still need your audience, pastor. I don't care if you have 80 people in your congregation. We need them to be part of this movement. Took a drop of ocean to start the ocean. So we need people to not be afraid and come out and do these things. So for me, more than anything else, you know, just help us find the avenues. Look, trust me, I'm not making anywhere near the money I made on Hercules and Andromeda these last dozen years. I'm still Screen Actors Guild and I'm Directors Guild. So under the union, I take the minimum in both those things. I want to put out movies that have positive message, and I'm going to keep doing that. And by the way, I got to give a quick plug for this. These Comic Cons, I still get invited to and sign autographs with Hercules Andromeda, or, you know, guest starring on Supergirl, whatever it may be. Most people come to my table now. They want 8x10s from God's Not Dead, Soul Surfer, What If. That's what they want. So I'm doing the first ever Faith and Family Con. I'm working with a guy that does a lot of Comic Cons, but he's a Christian conservative based in Knoxville. We're going to be, check this out right there. It's called Rise Up Con, riseupcon.com. And I hope people will show up and be part of this thing. It's going to be in Sevierville, Tennessee, just south of Knoxville. It's right next to Dollywood, so you can make a long weekend with your family out of it. And May 30th, we're doing a golf tournament. Here's May 30th. We're doing a golf tournament. We're raising money for a pro-life organization and money for a foster care organization that places kids in the Christian foster homes around the country. So go to riseupcon.com. We already got a bunch of celebrities coming to this golf tournament. We're filling up fast. And Rise Up Con has, we got wonderful actors that are going to be there that do faith and family. They've done secular stuff too, but they do a lot of faith and family adventures. And I hope people want to show up. We still got about 20 spaces left on the golf tournament. We're expecting close to 5,000 people to be there. We got like 70, 75 vendors sign up already. We got some great speakers, some great musical acts. Great. We're going to have two movies and two documentaries as well. So I hope people show up and support it. We're doing it next year. I got a call from Steve Green from Hobby Lobby. We're doing it next year at his Bible Museum in Washington, D.C.
Awesome.
Wow, that is awesome.
Well, thanks so much, Kevin. Dr. Doger, can we pray for this young man?
You can. I would like to say to you, When God's Not Dead came out and all, our ministry, we partnered with another ministry, and we did rent out a movie studio. We paid out a movie studio, and we were there to watch your movie.
Thank you. So appreciate that.
We support you in any way.
Thank you.
All right. Father, we thank you. We bless you. We honor you for your goodness and your mercy, for your love and kindness and peace. And I thank you, Lord, for our brother who shared with us today, Lord God, his humility, the humility that he's shown, Lord, is just awesome. And I pray, God, that you would just open doors. You would give favor. Even as he has poured his life out, Lord, your word says, given as shall be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. Lord, I pray that you will cause men to give into his sack, Lord, to sow into him in the things that he is doing for your glory. And we thank you for him, Lord. We even pray, Lord, in the name of Jesus for his protection, Lord, because even as he steps further in these perilous times, we don't know what to expect in these days. Mm-hmm. But we do know, Lord God, that you'll never leave us nor forsake us. So be with him, guide him, and protect him. Bless his wife, keep her as well, Lord, and his sons and his children, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Right. Amen. That will be done. Thank you very much.
God bless you, Kevin.
Take care, guys. See you soon.
See you soon.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Hello, this is Dr. Kevin Cruz, and I'm the president of the board for Serving Others in Love in Honduras. What led me to get involved? It's when I felt Jesus asked me the same question as Peter. Do you love me? And each time I had to answer the question why I wasn't feeding his sheep. Of course, there are needy people in America. But once I went overseas, it became obvious to me that these were the least Jesus was talking about. Then I met Dan Isabel, the international president of Soil Ministries. Dan shared with me how Honduras is the second poorest in our hemisphere. Here's Dan Isabel to explain why he and his family have been ministering in Honduras for over 60 years.
In 1964, my mother took her three children and started this ministry. With only $75 a month and a burning desire to serve widows and orphans and to show them the love of Jesus. Before she was finished, she had pioneered 76 churches and a bilingual school. Now we have over 170 churches, provide water, food, and evangelism to thousands of children and to widows. Children are also loved through our deaf school, emergency medical fund, medical missions trips, and child evangelism. But there is still so much more to do. We have churches that need roofs and available land that can be used to build schools, clinics, and churches. Some of our locations don't even have enough food for themselves. Some of our transportation is broken beyond repair. But let me introduce you to one of my partners, Dr. Tony Ponsetti, to tell you more.
Serving others in love in Honduras is my passion, because we're equipping pastors and leaders with seminary-approved degrees and marriage seminars that can keep them from being shut down. Did you notice how the true story of Sound of Freedom started in Honduras? Nothing could make me prouder than to know that our Shalom home of trafficked girls is fighting this unspeakable evil today. Now, let me introduce Dr. Thomas Doger so he can tell you how you can get involved.
500 people giving $17 per month provide over $100,000 of support to the children of Honduras. You can be a part of making a difference in the lives of the children of Honduras. Fortunately, some of us can help build a school or put a roof on a church. But more than just money, we want to invite you and your church to go to Honduras on a mission trip. There are many possibilities, and we would love to talk about how God can allow you to reach his children. Please visit our website at soilministries.org and click on donate. Thank you.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Kevin Cruz giving you another pump because guess what? The Supernatural Junkies are on Rumble. All you have to do is go to Rumble, go to search, and when you search for channels, you look for Supernatural Junkies, and all of our stuff is going to start popping up. It's great because you're going to be able to see the links. You'll get to see exactly why we are saying what we're saying. But most importantly, this is a great way to share with your family and your friends exactly why we are living in prophetic times and why we cannot give up access to our bodies.
Hey, folks, it's Dr. Dennis from Supernatural Junkies. I just want to talk to you today about Protandim. I've been taking Protandim for a few years, and you know what? I feel a difference. I am younger than my age. At least I think I am. Anyway, Protandim is a strong antioxidant producer in your body because what it does, it causes your body to increase its glutathione production. And glutathione, folks, is the strongest antioxidant your body has. So if you want to keep strong antioxidants in your body and be a healthier you, I suggest you use Protandim.